There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile, hour number two on this Monday. Glad you're here. You know, thinking about this, so Clyde and Henrietta, the high-stepping turkeys, winning our 2018 Alabamian of the Year, and then Governor Ivey commenting on the gas tax, and I said, you know, that story seems to be leading a lot of places today as a hot state news story. Of course, those of y'all that listen to the station realize that discussion we've been having for, what, months and months here, if not longer, on the station, telling you that's one of the three big things I think are coming up in session this year. That, along with the lotto, along with Medicaid expansion. But I wonder if Clyde and Henrietta, the high step in turkeys, will be able to comment on the proposed gas tax. As Alabamians of the Year, will they come into the... I don't know if they would be present to present in the House or the Senate in Montgomery. I'm not sure, but we'll have to keep an eye on that. Also mentioning the president, just the rumor mill right now. We know this factually, that because Sarah Sanders said something earlier on Twitter, the president going to the border on Thursday. All right, going to the border on Thursday. But now rumor mill says president's looking for airtime with the networks tomorrow. Thank goodness not tonight. There's a football game tonight at 7. But airtime tomorrow for a primetime address. We'll let you know if this is confirmed, this is going to be a thing or not. Right now, it's just a couple news sources saying it's kind of a rumor capacity thing that they're looking for. It doesn't mean it's happening yet, but we'll keep our eyes on that story. All right, I want you all to say hello to the author of Wicked Mobile and also the namesake for Kirby on Politics, Brendan Kirby, joining us now. Hey, man.
Hey, fly, Eagles, fly.
Now, see, y'all heard it. Now, before we go any further with your Fly Eagles Fly and take it on the Saints, can go ahead and give people your Twitter handle right now so you can take that battle to Twitter.
Yeah, at Brendan K. Kirby.
Oh my gosh, you just walked in and set off a glitter grenade inside somewhere, and now you're gonna have to deal with that. And speaking of contentious issues out there, shutdown day 17 or whatever it is, I think it's 17 today, and I just talked to Congressman Byrne last hour. I mean, he made it sound like, oh yeah, they're going to get things worked out, but I don't see where the negotiation takes place. It seems like both sides have painted themselves into a corner on this, Brendan.
Yeah, you know, I think that there's a lot of calculation in Washington that this will go the way they normally go, which is, you know, there's a period of disruption, but, you know, the Republicans normally back down and the Democrats sort of get what they want. I mean, that's the way these mostly go. That doesn't really factor in the fact that Trump doesn't operate like a normal politician does. So he might just say, the hell with it. This is my presidency. I'm just going to stake everything right here. I promise the wall, and we're going to get the wall, we're going to take the whole ship down with us.
All right, but I mean, in the past, right, the formula has been we go into a shutdown, and then somebody seems to get connected to the shutdown, either Republicans or Democrats or an individual in the case of a president, and then the political heat gets turned up to a certain point when they acquiesce. They work out something, or they step back, they negotiate something. In this case, like you said, I don't know that happens. I would hope so, but I wouldn't be surprised if it didn't.
Well, if Trump really digs in and says, I'm just not going to give anything unless I get the wall, then the way out might be that eventually Republicans in the Senate break, and they decide that they'll cut some sort of deal with the Democrats to make it seem like, you know, they've won on border security and pass something that, you know, has enough
votes that can override a veto. So that could be the ultimate way out, although, you know, that probably wouldn't come quickly. That would probably come, you know, if this drags into record territory, you know, well into record territory. I think the longest shutdown we've ever had is 21 days,
yeah.
I think, back in the Gingrich 90s. So, you know, we're kind of getting close to that point now. I think we'd have to get well beyond it, you know, before you had that. You'd have to get to the point where, like, people aren't getting, you know, money for food stamps, that sort of thing. You know, regular people really start to feel it in a real way, and not just federal workers and people inconvenienced by not being able to go to national parks and things.
But, I mean, you get to that point, and what you just described, so without the president doing it, Senate Republicans work the deal, they sign it, then that bill has to go to the president. Does he then veto that, and then they got to override the president's veto, even though it's Republicans doing it?
Right. I mean, if it came down to that. I mean, if the shutdown goes long enough, then the calculations of Senate Republicans will differ from Trump's. I mean, Trump might just figure, I don't care whether I get reelected. I don't care what happens to me. I don't care what people think. I'm just going to stand firm on this. But there's a lot of Republicans in the Senate who do want to get reelected. And, you know, they might decide, you know, at some point, this just isn't worth it. The Democrats aren't going to give in on this. And I'm getting bashed for this, so I'm going to do that. Now, from the Democrats' perspective, I think we talked about this before, if I were Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi, I would try and just get a really good deal out of it. I mean, it's clear Trump's desperate for the wall. If I were them, I'd give him this $5 billion and get something pretty significant in return. You know, I mean, and the obvious thing would be full amnesty for the DACA people, you know, which could be up to 2 million people, perhaps, 2.5 million people. You know, Trump was willing to do that last year, although he wanted changes to the legal immigration system that Democrats are never going to go for. But, you know, one could imagine, you know, Schumer and Pelosi going to Trump saying, you know what, we'll give you your $5 billion in exchange for amnesty, clean trade, you know, none of this legal immigration stuff. And Trump might say yes. And from their perspective, you know, it's $5 billion for a wall that's never going to be finished, because that wouldn't commit Congress to spending any more money down the road. You know, Trump would be able to build a small portion of the wall, and they'd get, you know, amnesty for the people. And supposedly that's their top priority, is to protect these dreamer kids who came here through no fault of their own. Seems like a pretty good deal for Democrats.
Okay, so help me here, because number one, that would give President Trump a signature win to carry forward into 2020, to use his political capital there. Hey, I promised you I would work on this and get this done. Look what I got done. And at the same time, the Democrats have not just said there's no deal. They went from the money part to talking about it was immoral. The wall was immoral. So if you say the wall is immoral, how do you there's no nuance to immoral. Either it is or isn't, right? So how would they say, well,
I mean, the way they would spin that is, we love the Dreamers so much that we were willing to, give Trump money for something that we
so they would be immoral too,
priority or whatever. And but you know, it's you got to get something to get something. That would be sort of, you know, the way I have to deal with it. But, you know, maybe Democrats just want the Dreamer kids as an issue, you know, rather than solving. I mean, the most preposterous thing is all this talk I hear all the time, including just from the lawmaker that you had, you know, was on the news segment before we came on, that says, oh, this is a fifth century solution, walls don't work. Well, if walls don't work, why do we have so many walls? If it's a fifth century relic, you know, then why do people build walls all over the place? You know, Israel built a wall and it stopped terrorism, you know, to a large degree. And they weren't people that were just coming for a job. I mean, these were people that are willing to strap bombs to themselves and blow themselves up. That wall's been pretty effective. You know, you think about all the other things that we had in the fifth century that we don't have anymore because it really is out of date. You know, we kept walls. We have walls everywhere. We have fences everywhere. So physical barriers are effective. You know, by themselves, they can't stop illegal immigration, but it certainly is a helpful tool to slow down people who are coming across the border, to give the Border Patrol time to catch up with them. You know, when we built double-layer fencing in San Diego in the 1990s,
illegal border crossings in that sector dropped by like 95% in 1 year. Walls do work. and I suspect that a lot of the people who say that, you know, they don't support this because they don't think it's effective, are afraid that it will be effective because, you know, they have no, a huge part of this country now has no interest in stopping illegal immigration. They want as many people to come as want to come. I mean, that's what you gotta figure out what your goal is before you figure what the solution is. Yeah. We don't have a consensus that we should even stop illegal border crossings.
Well, that that would be a discussion we could have, if people said, hey, I believe in completely open, porous borders, and we could talk about that when we get back, versus protecting the border. But once again, I don't know where the nuance, when the Democrats have said this is immoral, the wall, the structure is immoral, and then, of course, you can play the game, how many of them voted for the double-layer fencing and all those things in the past. But if they're saying now this is immoral, that doesn't, the same way President Trump says it's $5.6 billion or nothing or something like that, I don't know where the wiggle room is. Usually,
well,
you
I mean,
can kind of see...
About this, though. If you say that the wall is immoral, the only way that makes any kind of logical, coherent sense is if you think that it's immoral to stop people from coming across.
Agreed. That's what I'm saying. So how
if you agree that we should stop people from entering the country without authorization, then the wall is just a tool. I mean, I don't get the morality argument of it.
Well,
it's okay to stop people with, you know, Border Patrol agents carrying guns, but it's not okay to stop them with a fence. I mean, explain to me what the difference is.
Brendan, it doesn't matter. You make arguments that a lot of us have made, I'm with you, but when they say it's immoral, that's not something that you can negotiate on, right? If you're on record saying that the president's wall is immoral, and then you work a DACA deal in exchange, you then just signed on to something that you just said was immoral.
Sure. Yeah, sure. But, you know, I mean, politicians have negotiated over things like abortion, too. And that's, you know, a moral issue
but it goes to a Supreme Court ruling in those cases.
It's up to Congress, whether or not to, if you recall, abortion was a big issue when the Affordable Care Act was going through Congress because there were some pro-life Democrats still left in the caucus, that did not want to support a bill that would fund abortions. So, they compromised and they put language in that the supporters said would prevent this from happening, and some of the pro-life activists said, you know, no, that's not going to prevent it from happening, and they went along and they did it. But I mean, that's a moral issue that to win some votes, there was compromise on. So yeah, you could certainly do it. It's just, again, I mean, the wall is just a sideshow unless we decide that we have agreement on what the wall is supposed to do. The wall is supposed to prevent people from entering the country illegally. But we don't really have a consensus in this country anymore that we should even be doing that. So if you don't think we should stop people from coming across, then yeah. I mean, a wall, I guess, is immoral because you're stopping people from exercising their human rights to move to where they want to move.
Yeah, economic osmosis is what I call that process. And we'll talk about that when we get back. More with Brendan Kirby. You check out the website, kirbyonpolitics.com. Talk about his story, House Dems and no more debt votes, when we come back.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, 123 FM Talk 106.5. And there we go. President has tweeted about that. It was kind of rumor mill stuff at the beginning of the show, but now from @RealDonaldTrump on Twitter, he says this, I am pleased to inform you that I will address the nation on the humanitarian and national security crisis on our southern border Tuesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern. That would be 8 our time, y'all. So tomorrow night at 8. So you get a football game tonight at 7, and then tomorrow night at 8, presidential address. And then, of course, the subsequent trip, it looks like, and that's confirmed, president heading to the border on Thursday. All right, good time to continue our conversation with Brendan Kirby from KirbyOnPolitics.com, also the author of Wicked Mobile. And you and I were just talking during the break about incentivizing or disincentivizing travel across the border.
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, I think that Trump should address the public. It's overdue. Other presidents have used that kind of setting to try and sway public opinion. Now, I don't know how effective Trump will be able to you know, wield that bully pulpit because he's so polarizing. But, you know, he should explain to the American people why this is important and what he's trying to do. And, you know, in normal times, you might be able to move the needle and help get a deal. Because, and that's what Reagan used to do. He would rally people to call their congressman and then, you know, a lot of times he was able to get what he wanted. But look, the reason people come to the United States is primarily to work, because mm-hmm. they can come here, they can work, they can make more money, you know, even in kind of the shadow economy, you know, than they can back home. And if they couldn't do that, you know, then they wouldn't come. So if we made the E-Verify system mandatory, which, you know, businesses for free can log on to the government system and instantaneously confirm whether someone that they are hiring is authorized to work in the United States, you know, it's a pretty effective system. The problem is it's not mandatory. So if we made that mandatory, all businesses have to do this, and then followed up with aggressive enforcement, so that you were auditing businesses, and if you found out that they were not using the E-Verify system or were knowingly hiring illegal immigrants anyway, you punished them severely, you would make it much harder to work in the United States. And if people couldn't work in the United States, you know, they'd go back home. You know, the other thing you can do is expand detention space. You know, so if the Democrats, you know, came to Trump and said, look, we're not going to build the wall because it's too politically hot, but we'll give you a whole lot of money to build a whole lot more detention space or to rent out more detention space so that you can detain a much larger number of people. Well, you know, if you're a single man from Guatemala and you come here and you know you're going to be sitting in a detention center for 2 months and then you're going to be deported and come back home, you're probably not going to come because it doesn't do you or your family any good to sit up in lockup if you can't work. So, I mean, that's really the key to stopping illegal immigration, is to take away the incentives to come here. And if you did that, you know, you would have much less of a problem with illegal immigration.
I want to step over to a story, the latest over at Kirby on Politics. And when I saw this happen last week, I said, oh, no, here we go. If it wasn't bad before, here we go. And your headline, House Dems, no more debt votes. Explain that to folks. What do you mean about this?
Well, you know, theoretically, we have a debt ceiling, a cap on how much in debt the government can go. Of course, it doesn't really mean a whole lot, because whenever we come up against a cap, Congress can just vote to raise the cap again. And this is what they've done dozens and dozens of times over the years. And, you know, they're kind of pro forma votes. But the problem from the perspective of politicians is that there are a handful of cranky, you know, fiscal hawk members of Congress who have turned these votes into something more than kind of pro forma votes, and have, you know, threatened to withhold their vote to raise the debt limit and to try to leverage, you know, some kind of spending reform out of that. Now, they haven't really gotten a whole lot out of that, you know, maneuver, but they have forced politicians to take a whole lot of uncomfortable votes to raise the debt ceiling. And, you know, they've gotten some, you know, that played a role in getting those temporary spending caps that we had that Trump and Congress just obliterated last year. You know, so it has done some good. And so Nancy Pelosi and the gang decided one of the first things they were going to do is they were going to pass a rule to get rid of this. So now it's just automatic when the when you're going to go above the debt ceiling and you pass a budget that exceeds the limit, it just automatically rises. No need to take an uncomfortable vote that might be publicized and used against you.
Well, I want people to, I mean, slow down and hear that, y'all. That is now the change, that to raise the debt ceiling, to spend more money that we do not have, they don't really have to put us on notice that they're doing that. That just happens.
Yeah, it just happens automatically. Now, I still have to take the vote to spend the money.
Yeah,
you know,
but the primary vote where
but,
you can stop
it. Congressman Byrne pointed out, you know, to you in the last hour, you know, most of our budget is on autopilot anyway. You know, you don't have to vote to spend more money on Medicare or Medicaid or Social Security. Anyone who's eligible automatically gets it. So most of the budget is on autopilot, and, you know, you've got a tiny portion of the budget that you have some, you know, theoretical control over. But if you're going to bump against the spending cap, then you just pass the budget and the cap automatically rises. Now, of course, the Senate isn't bound by these rules, so senators are still going to have to take some uncomfortable votes on
good.
This. But at least while the Democrats control the House, you know, they're home free. And my guess is
that there's an awful lot of Republicans in the House that secretly are pretty happy.
Oh, they're happy.
Well,
yeah, you're right.
They don't want to take those votes either.
No, you're right. No, and absolutely right. But that's the problem. That is the problem. It's like the whole debate over whether... I wish there was a big issue. I wish the Democrat debate over the $5 billion that we can't spend that money because we don't have it because of the wall. I wish that was real. I do. I wish they were that worried about it, but they're not, neither side.
Yeah, I mean, if they applied that level of concern over, spending a lot of money to other areas of government, then maybe we could start to tackle it. $22 trillion right now, the numbers get to stratospheres that are hard to understand.
And I think even you would think the opposite would happen. The higher they would get, more people would be engaged. But actually, I think it's the opposite. The higher they get, the more people are disengaged from that number. It's not even a real thing.
It's just hard to imagine it. I wrote a story about a year ago for Life, so trying to give an idea of how much money that is. And one of the things that came across is that is more than all the money. Our debt is more than all the money. And by that, I mean, if you took all of the physical bills and coins, not just dollars, but all currencies together, we don't have that much money on planet Earth.
Wow.
Physical money. Now, a lot of the money is electronic and it's zinging through computers, but that's still a lot of money. You get all the money and all the bank accounts, all the physical money in the economy, all the loose change in your couch in every currency and add it all up. It's less money by a pretty good amount than what our national debt is.
Y'all read more over at KirbyOnPolitics.com, or if they want to talk Saints and Eagles with you, where do they go?
Yeah, at Brendan K. Kirby, you can talk about how the Nick Foles legend will continue on Sunday.
Oh, man. He did it to himself, man. I'll sit back, pop some popcorn, watch that go on over on Twitter. And we're coming right back. Phone number 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
At 136 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile on this Monday. Love to hear from you at 343-0106. 343-0106. People asking questions. Why not talk about tonight's game? Number one, I would have to bring like Dalton in to talk about tonight's game. I am as superstitious as it can be, and I'm not going to get into that. I'm not going to make any discussion of tonight's game. Maybe some of the... Some of the stories I'll talk about is like the lament from the folks out in San Jose that the ticket prices aren't, the tickets are in very little demand. I think what they call the secondary market, in other words, StubHub and I guess scalpers on the street and all that aren't getting as much for the tickets. I think it's a long way for people to go. I think it's a long way for fans of either team to go to San Francisco. And if they are like super fans and they went to their semifinal games, do they have the budget to go to the next one? I think that's like... Those are real questions. Hopefully, they'll address that during Feinbaum coming up in just a little bit. I mean, I think all games should be in New Orleans. I think just the perfect place for them, just put all games in New Orleans, maybe Atlanta, but that's not happening. So that's probably why. That's in depth. I mean, if you want to talk more about the game, X's and O's, Dalton can come in here. We'll take your calls on that. Also, the president, if you didn't hear earlier, started off with a discussion of going to the border on Thursday. President Trump's going Thursday to the border to highlight border security, and then it is a confirmed thing. When we started the show, it was just a rumor mill that the White House was looking for TV time. In other words, looking for the networks if they were available for coverage on 9 o'clock Eastern, 8 o'clock our time tomorrow night. Looks like that is a go-ahead, so there will be a presidential address tomorrow night at 8. We'll talk more about that coming up, but that is his chance maybe to sway some opinion. I would wish that would be out there, and maybe there's tons of people that could be swayed, and they're not the people that craft emails to me or text. I rarely get, when it comes to discussion of the wall, I rarely get somebody who is listening to both sides. Either they seem to be all in or all against the wall. Right? I mean, are you somebody who's, you could go either way on this? You could be swayed? I mean, that would be the point of having a presidential address, right? I mean, folks are galvanized right now. supporters and opponents. So your hope there would be, I guess, if there are some people that have not made up their mind about the wall, the president could sway their opinion, or somebody who's opposed to the wall all of a sudden change their mind. What would it take if you're somebody who opposes the wall, or you're indifferent? Are there people that are indifferent on this? But if you're indifferent on it, what could the president say tomorrow night that would change your mind? If you were somebody, you're against the idea of a wall, or you are, on the wall, what could the president say in this address that would change your mind? I'd love to hear from you at 343-0106, 343-0106. Also, somebody asking again about this gas tax thing. Listen, it's a news story, yes, but it shouldn't be. If you listen to FM Talk 106.5 for a while, we've been talking about this gas tax increase in detail for months now. I guess this all goes off the governor saying, she said that the gas tax was an important thing, an increase for infrastructure in Alabama, and I'm paraphrasing now. And people are saying, oh, well, what is this going to mean? And we've talked about this. The current tax right now in Alabama, 18 cents per gallon, with about half of that, 45% going to state road and bridge fund, 55% that goes to local governments. So there's two parts to this. If you want to get into, if you have not been along for the discussions in the past, what's interesting is, number one, the debate over increasing the gas tax. To me, it seems like that ship's already sailed. It seems like there's enough Republican backing of this that this is going to happen. Then, of course, you get into what will the number be, because it's not a percentage. It's cents on a gallon. So it doesn't fluctuate with gas prices going up and down. That's probably smart. So it's cents on the gallon. So what will that increase be? And then on top of that, the bigger debate, I think, is going to be who's going to get the money? Now, think about this. There's a debate on the gas tax that's already going on, even though session doesn't start till March, right? The debate is how much of the 55% right now that's passed down to local government should be coming back with the increase. In other words, if that gallon of gasoline is bought in Mobile, if it's bought in Daphne, if it's bought in Birmingham, how much should stay there? Because you can argue, hey, by the nature of that tank of gas being filled up there, or that gallon of gas being purchased in an individual metro, then that means that vehicle, the vehicle is traveling on the roads there, wearing the roads out. They need the money for road projects. Where the other counties, the non-urban counties, and I mean, we've got 67 counties, and I would say, what do y'all think fairly? You think it's probably 60 versus 7? Because you have the major metro counties and their ancillary counties, or the commuter counties, like the way you have Mobile, Baldwin, you have Jefferson, Shelby, right? So where do you think that should be? Because there's going to be small counties arguing that, hey, we need that money. We need a bigger take of that money to come to Montgomery and then get doled out to the smaller counties. We've got road projects, which they do. We got road projects here. We may not have the revenue that's coming into a Mobile County, Baldwin County, Jefferson County, Shelby County, but we need that revenue. That's where the debate royale is going to come up. It's going to be, I think they're all going to, well, not all. Every all and guarantees are things I do not do. But there's going to be a lot of people with R's and D's behind their name that will agree to a gas tax increase. But then they'll turn around and battle not based on R's and D's, but probably rural versus, urban areas to who gets what. That's where it should get contentious. Also, the lotto, they're going to discuss that. And I think it's interesting that they address, if I was picking the way they should address these, they should do gas tax before lotto. So nobody can say, oh, well, the lotto is going to be for the roads. Because you know what they're going to do. They're going to make the lotto about schools, even though that may not be the most pressing issue for funding in Alabama. But it's the easiest sell. The easiest way they sell it, right? Oh, it's for the children. Whether that be the most important need for revenue that would come from a lottery. But if they get the road thing off the table, then I guess they could narrow it down to fewer things. How about the Alabama prison lottery? You know, that's the big issue, one of the big issues, right? Funding prisons and prison reform in Alabama with the chance of a federal receivership of our prison system if we don't get things turned around. Does that pass? Alabama, the nation's only prison funding lottery? Would that pass? What about what other things that the state would need? I mean, if it was, let's say they did not get a gas tax increase, would a road and bridges lottery, I think it has a better chance of than a prison lottery. But yeah, for sure what they'll do is we'll say it's for the kids and it's a school lottery. That's what, and then, of course, if they pass it, what does that mean? Does that mean the state of Alabama now grows the bureaucracy, right? This is not anti-lotto. I'm really, like I've told y'all before, I'm kind of laissez-faire on that. I'm not, you know, I'm not really worried if we have a lotto or don't. I do worry that if the state gets in the business of lottery, the state gets in the business of doing the lottery, how many people are added to state employees? Do we build a new building? You know, how many people are associated with that? How much does that grow government? Could we be the first in the nation to do something actually different and just legalize lotteries? What about that? If the state, if in session this year, instead of voting on Alabama's lotto, just said, hey, here's what we're going to do. We're going to legalize lotteries in the state. And they can put some guidelines in. They can put some, you know, they can put some bumpers on it and say, you've got to be able to bond a certain amount of money to be able to pay off the lottery. You have to give back X percent. You know, maybe there's a lottery license the state would like this, right? That you have to pay this to the state to be able to run a lottery in the state. Then if you pay the state, that you can do the lottery, and then some percentage of your net receipts for your lottery go back to the state. But the state would not be running the lottery. It'd be Dalton Orwig's lottery, or your lottery, or somebody else's lottery. What do you think about that? Would that make it a little bit more palatable? No, it's just interesting. I mean, but I know it won't happen. No, we won't be the first. It is interesting that the situation with lotteries, think about this, where they have Class 3 gaming. Okay, so rolling dice, cards, all those things. Those are private companies running those operations. But in those same states, the state runs a lottery. Shouldn't it be, because I've said this before and I think it's true, lottery is the wine spritzer of the gambling world. So if anything should be in the hands of private enterprise, if you're worried about the evils of it, it should be the wine spritzer versus the hard liquor version of gambling. But it's not that way. Class 3 gaming is in private hands. Lotteries are in states. All right, grab a call or two on this, and we'll run to the news break here in a second as well. Let's go to Gerald in Baldwin County first. Hey, Gerald.
Hey.
Hey, man.
I guess I'm dating myself, but the question with the whole scheme of things, what you were talking about, that once it got to $1 trillion, the national debt, it seems like everybody just quit paying attention because that number is just so large. But if I remember correctly, when I was a teenager during, I think, Nixon's term, they had a government freeze on spending. So, and every time they talk about cuts, it's cuts from what they're going to go further with their increase. And I'm so sick of listening to people saying, well, you've got to have, like, even state agencies, if we got to spend this money or we're not going to get it next year. And mm-hmm. it's crazy. And why can't we just say, and let attrition take care of itself? Because we've got too many government employees anyway. Just say, okay, each department, you're frozen. And if I'm not mistaken, and I may be, it was Nixon, but some president did that when I was a teenager.
Yeah, and I don't have that in front of me, Gerald. I'll look into the question here. I don't have an answer for you right now. Yeah. Shrinking through attrition as well. Once again, I pointed out what happens in Washington every time when it comes to a negotiation. It's not that they get to the negotiation and because I'm not going to get what I want, you don't get what you want. Mm-mm-mm-mm. No, it's, you don't want me to have this, but I don't want you to have that. So you're going to let me have what I want. I'll let you have what you want, and we move on down the road. That's the way it works. Coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
7:52, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Tell you what, it's going to be a great football game. I just had a friend stop by and drop me off some. This, you know, it's a bourbon that I don't even know that I have the chops. I shouldn't even be allowed to open this, but it's Basil Hayden's Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey, and I know I've got some big bourbon fans out there. Y'all can drool over this one. I'll put some pictures up in a little bit. We'll be sampling this during the game tonight. If the game tonight wasn't a big enough deal, too, it is also the missus, who is the biggest Crimson Tide fan in the house. It's her birthday. So she's. I said, what do you want for your birthday? National championship. I was like, listen, I can give me something I can go down to Best Buy and get. You know, the national championship I can't pick up there, but we'll be live tweeting that tonight starting at 7 o'clock. And then tomorrow night at 8 o'clock our time, it is a thing now. It was concrete was not dry on this when we started the show, but it is now. The president to address the nation tomorrow and talk about why the border wall should be built. Speaking of which, I asked this question. I said, I'd love to hear from somebody who was either against the wall, or meh, and I don't know how many people are indifferent about it, but it's interesting to me what could be said if you're against the border wall or you're meh about the border wall. What could the president say tomorrow night that would make a difference? Because I worry sometimes that we're so galvanized in the discussion here that there's not room for negotiation. This texter said, I'm not indifferent and generally agree with the wall, but it's really more the idea of the wall. I could have my mind changed. Let's be honest. A large physical barrier from coast to coast is a ridiculous idea. But no barrier is also an equally stupid idea. There has to be give and take. With a large variety of security approaches based on a number of people trying to cross, geography, and other things. You have to draw a line in the sand somewhere so you can negotiate. Dems will have to give a lot on of increased personal personnel on the border, plus lots of tech to change my mind, plus E-Verify is absolute necessity. Now, that's great, and that's what we talked about with Brendan, too, that you would think from a part of this discussion, you could bring in a whole suite of things. And as I talked about the economic osmosis, I mean, if you talk to somebody who believes there should be no border wall, should be no security on the border, then you've got to look at the process of osmosis, right? If you put something wet next to something dry and no barrier between them, they both become moist, right? You have something hot next to something cold with no barrier, they both become lukewarm. That's the process of osmosis, right? They're going to even out, the yin and the yang of the world. Well, in economics, the same thing would be true. If the standard of living north of the border is what it is, our standard of living still the greatest on planet Earth, I would argue, and south of the border in Mexico, it is not, then if you have no border, just the truths of economy, the truths of people striving for better for themselves, of course they're going to continue to illegally immigrate because that's where the work is. That's where the money is. So if you leave an open border, so one of two things has to happen with that osmosis process. Both sides become lukewarm or both sides become moist, right? No one's dry, no one's wet. Everything equals out. And at that point, and only at that point, would you have immigration stop coming across the border if you didn't have a wall, a fence, border security agents, something like that. But part of that process, like this texter says, is E-Verify. You can take away the incentive by making sure the jobs aren't given to illegal immigrants. That's intelligent. It's not just a wall, a fence, a security zone, drones, members of ICE on the border. It should also be the disincentive, economic disincentive, that you can come here. If you do get through and don't get caught, there's not going to be a job for you. There's no work. And then you reinforce that wall, not with extra rebar, but with the truths of economy. All right, grab a call on this before we wrap up for the day. Let me go to LV in Mobile. Hey, LV.
Hey, it's Hilcheck. I think it was like 10 or 12 years ago. They give Boeing a contract for cameras, electronic fencing, and ground detectors and everything. And it ended up being a total failure because it didn't work. I'm thinking it was like 10 or 12 years ago, and you can check and find out about that. But Boeing was issued a contract, I think, like $2.4 billion for that. It was a total failure.
No way. Boeing getting a sweetheart contract?
Oh, yeah.
LV,
yeah,
come on. I've never heard of such.
It was a total failure. It didn't stop anything.
You know, we have a former Boeing executive now moved into a top position of the president's cabinet. I just want to point that out. Worrisome for those of us down here that aren't in Seattle. LV, I appreciate the call. I don't have that in front of me, but it wouldn't surprise me. But once again, could you... E-Verify is already a thing. We don't have to create E-Verify out of whole cloth. It's already... What if you make it mandatory? And what if you say, hey, that's part of this suite here. We're gonna put fencing in or steel slats or wall. I don't care. The semantics drive me crazy on this. You can put something there. Probably not going to pull three-strand barbed wire like we do on the farm, but we're going to put something there to stop people coming across. At the same time, we're going to make sure that the incentive is not here for those jobs. President, well, we'll talk about this tomorrow, but the president will address the nation tomorrow night, 8 o'clock our time on this. Now, 7 o'clock our time tonight, there'll be a football game. Probably way more, I don't know, will there be more eyes for the football game or the address? Maybe the president could do something during halftime. Help each other out. Paul Feinbaum Show, they'll be talking about tonight's football game next.